Each one teach one, in order to reach one. We're here with the CEN, sure to learn and grow.
Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani, and on the panel, we have Professor Amin Ra. I'm expecting other people to come, and then we'll have more here. Our guest tonight is political columnist Mike Jones. And Mike has been... Oh, we have Brother Machinda coming in. Mike has been on the show before, and he's also a part of the Level Set. And the Level Set is a podcast group that we affiliate with, and we do the Message to the Black Diaspora with them. And this has been a real good partnership, and I've been enjoying their commentary ever since I met them. So it's a real good relationship that we have, and the information is dynamic, in my opinion. So I'm gonna go ahead and we're gonna get started with Brother Mike, and the topic is the Black community. And he poses a question, the road ahead. So we're gonna see what we are gonna come up with when discussing this, and Brother Machinda has joined us. So Brother Mike, thanks for coming. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, and always a pleasure working with you on Message to the Black Diaspora. So let's get started, Mike.
Okay, brother, it's always an honor to be included in these discussions. I decided to approach quote my assignment tonight, rather than being declarative like I know the answers, which I don't, but I really do have a ton of questions. And I think one of the things that we're confronted with, and when you and I picked the title, The Black Community, The Road Forward, question mark, it really is about creating a accurate, if not also new, understanding of a couple things. Who we are in America, who we've been, and who we'll be, but also America at this point in time and history, because the America that's been we've been part of from our historical experience here is a lot different than America, although our conditions and circumstances are a lot of ways haven't changed in 250 years. And white Americans go celebrate their 250-year anniversary of the founding of the United States. And I think that's a good time to pause and have a discussion about where is America, where are we in America, and what does the road forward look like, both for us as well as the country we happen to reside in. So I think this is we're at a big inflection point. So one of the things I like to spend a little time talking about is some context. And one of the things that makes this time in American history so different than the other times we've seen this kind of white reaction, because the what you're looking at with MAGA and Trump, the immigration stuff, if you're black in America, these things happen regularly, periodically, on a regular basis to us as part of put white pushback to any advances, minor or substantial, that we may have made. But what's different now than historically is America is a different place. But 200 years of the country's formation, the country was about 85% white, 12% black, and then 3% kind of other. And so white supremacy could truly dominate and become the status quo because it was a predominantly white country, overwhelmingly white country, with a marginal minority population that happened to be us. And our Native American brothers were have been, for all intents and purposes, eliminated through genocide. But America today is a lot different country. If you take the last 50 years, let's say from 1975 to today, you're looking at a country that's no longer 85, 87% white. Census data will say tell you that about 53% of the people in this country self-identify as white, about 14% black, 18% and growing Latino or Hispanic, about 8% and growing Asian, a substantial percentage of people who say they're mixed. And then there's others. So you really got about 47% of the country that does not consider itself white. And yet you've got a country that's been founded on the whole and culture and governing and social structures are all predicated on white supremacy with an inherent privilege for white men particularly, but white people generally. So now you got this conglomeration of people, and part of it is really has been immigration. The major change, probably bigger than civil rights, was the passage of the 65 Immigration Act, Naturalization and Immigration Act, because it took away racial quotas from immigration. So at that From that time, over this last 60 years or so, you've had a huge influx of people from non-European countries in America. And it's why America still has been able to grow its economy, because its population was expanded by the people that came here from other places. But what that did was change the nature of the makeup of the country, as well as the inherent culture in this mix. So America now really is a multi-ethnic democratic republic. And that was the myth before, but now it's the reality. And part of what we're looking at is the white reaction to that change in status and the change in the power relationships between being white and all of these other people. The other thing is capitalism is so different now. Over the last 50 years, it has morphed into a different formulation. Before, it was a place-based thing. Capitalism has always been inequitable, so that part's not new. But it was in a place, you could see the factory, you knew what the job was, there seemed to be times where you can make improvements, etc. But America is no longer that industrial economy. It's a service economy based on of finance and banking. And fundamentally, it's created a world environment where capital is real liquid. So it goes wherever it thinks it can get the best deal. And what you've seen then is a dislocation of American workers, particularly white American workers. And so you could say in one regard that white elites have abandoned the white working class. And they had always abandoned us, but they abandoned the white working class. And the other part of this MAGA and Trump reaction is that white working class reacting to their fallen status and their sense of betrayal by the country. Because what has always happened to us and other people of color was never supposed to happen to them. So we're in the process of experiencing what I would say was a anticipated negative white reaction to whatever the black progress has been over the last, you pick the time frame, from civil rights to Obama getting elected. But what they've never experienced is trying to have that reaction when they no longer have the power, the influence, and the standing, and the population that they had. So the reason I want to say the road forward with a question mark is because we end up in this place that we're now talking about what we need to do, but our frame of reference has tendency to be looking backwards. And we need a term of art that I borrow from my friend Larry Fields all the time. We need a new black theory of the case. And by theory of the case, I'm not talking about the circumstances have changed, but the conditions under which our circumstances exist have changed. And it's something totally different. Also, you're watching the United States being repositioned in the global economy and the global political space. That's different. So all of this is kind of in the mix. And the real question is, what are we going to do? How do we see ourselves now, not only in this country, but how we see ourselves in this country as we see this country in the world? Because all of you're basically in flux all over the planet. And we have tendency to be fairly colloquial when we talk about our condition. We don't put a larger lens on our situation and say, this is what it looks like maybe up close. But when you put us in this global space, who are we relative to that space? And I think that's the discussion we ought to be having in places like this, because there's not like there's an answer. We really got to think it through, argue it through, and then try to come up with a strategy that gives us a long-term thought process, but also allows the flexibility for tactics, rather, that allows us to make decisions, make progress, and figure out what we do in this new reality. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And with that, we have to separate what I call memory from myth. Okay, that history is memory. We need to know what has actually happened here. And America is big on telling this mythical story about who it is, and we buy into that the same way. I think we just got past it, but for me, we do Dr. King a disservice every January because we got his whole life boiled down to the improvised ending of a speech that was never supposed to be in the speech. So the reality is Dr. King was evolving over time. And if you look at Dr. King or listen to him at the end, just before he was murdered, he sounded a different cadence and stylistic, but he was much closer to Malcolm than he was to the Dr. King in Montgomery, Alabama. So again, we don't process our own history and our own experience. And it's our misunderstanding of who we are. And again, I quote my friend Larry Fields, who is real fond of his favorite Omega, which is Carter G. Woodson. It is our miseducation of ourselves that has kind of keeps us in this subordinate position. So one of the things is that we have to figure that out. What's the history? What's the real memory separate from the myth that America likes to sell? And then we got to figure out what the expectations are. I mean, what's a realistic projection of what America in the 21st century is going to look like? What are we going to look like in that? And what does the world look like? Because we are very much living right now in a moment that is going through some seismic changes that fundamentally and as I look at us on this podcast, we both all of us have seen a lot of winners. So there's no high school kids listening to the program. And the America we got that we grew up in, that we got to be old men, is not going to be the America that your grandkids grow up in and they have to live in. It's not going to be the same world. And somewhere in this conversation, we have to begin to prepare them for whatever that journey looks like. But you can learn a lot from history, but you can't live in the past. You're gonna have to live in the present, getting ready for the future, and you need the history to understand how you got where you are and where you might be on the way to. That would be the discussion that I like to have tonight, not what happened, but what's next. Because I'll quote one of my favorite dynamic people, Miles Davis, when asked, Miles was asked, what do you do when you play the wrong note? And his answer was, there are no wrong notes. The only thing that matters is what you play next. So literally how we got here is almost irrelevant to where we gotta go. Okay. And we can spend a lot, and we have spent a lot of time nostalgically talking about the past, but as the Canadian Prime Minister said the other day, nostalgia is not a policy, okay? So the reality is, where do we go from here? And with that as the larger context, I would love to open it up and hear from you brothers about, one, the premise that I just laid out, and two, to the extent that you think it is worthy of a discussion, what does it generate from your perspective?
All right, let me go to the panel. And first of all, everyone besides Professor Ra, myself, and Mike was here when we started. So I'm going to read the topic again. That way, that'll help kind of moving forward. The topic is the Black community, the road ahead. And that's a question. And Mike just touched on a few things. So I'm gonna go to Brother Mashinda first. Brother Mashinda, you wanna unmute? Going once, going twice. All right, listening at the moment. Brother Ahi.
Yes, sir, brother.
So
Just
you're.
give me a second. Give me a second.
You want me to come back?
No, I'm gonna talk right now.
Okay.
Okay. Black community, the road ahead. And my question is, how can we not know what the road ahead is until those folks figure out what they're going to be as far as America is concerned, so that we as a community can figure out what our plan is going to be. Now, they have shown consistently what they are. They're heathens. They're going to commit genocide. They'll shoot you. It's not about facts. It's not about science. It's not about reason. It's not about logic. It's about their ideological commitment, which is about the white survival, what they consider to be the white survival of their people, and white supremacy. So you have a faction, or most of those, because they had about 80 million of those who voted for Donald Trump, who didn't have any kind of agenda, who didn't have anything to say, but we're gonna screw over everybody who ain't a white man. And if you with us, let's get down. And unfortunately, non-white folk, ass-kissing Mexicans, Spanish speaking, the one of people, those people who want to call themselves Latin. Got nothing to do with their people. They want to call themselves Latin. Those folk who they want to vote for, they're going to go Trump. We're going to do Cardano. We're going to do Trump. And now that they're getting their ass kicked out when they thought it was going to be about everybody else and it's about them, because you're not honorary. You're not a part of the crew. You're getting your ass kicked out just like everybody else. Now they got bad feel. I don't have no sorry feelings for them. We when those folks figure out if they're gonna be nice, look, they've been consistent. So I don't know, we don't have to sit around and really figure out what they're gonna be. We know what they are. They've shown us from the first contact with them thousands of years ago till 250, 300 years ago, we had to deal with the evil devils and how they deal with folk and how they dealing today. They have been consistent. It's about the genocide. We don't care about your family. We don't care about nothing that has to do with humanity or empathy. It's all about us. Who's the latest on the crew? They only been around a few thousand years. But it's all about we gonna commit genocide. That's the answer to everything. We gonna kill you. We gonna kill you, and we can be looking at the same thing. But when it comes to a color scheme, it's gonna be a different. It's gonna be a different. How we gonna describe this? These. Until recently. Because now, because they always treat each other like shit. Excuse me. They always treat each other like they treated us, but when they come to us, they all get together because they got a common enemy now. So we have screwed them around And then we done eliminated them from the earth, and we're gonna come back and start dealing with each other. They have no compassion for each other. These people are all about white supremacy. Then they have to figure out the majority of them, what are they going to be about? And before they figure out what they're going to be about, and sad for me to say, I know what they're about and I know what it's going to come down to. We'd rather just accelerate the end of the earth. We'd rather just pollution, genocide, and everything else. If we can't be in control, then that's the end. And we'll just accelerate everything else and destroy everything because we can't even see a future without us having privilege.
So, Brother Ahi,
I'm listening.
what do the black community do?
We can't do nothing until they decide what they're going to do and come up with a plan. Are
So
y'all going to be heathens? Are you talking about destroying everybody? We got one plan. If the majority of you get together and decide that, well, damn, we see that we have some type of, we see now what they're talking about. We out here killing each other. And the government is telling us something that we don't see. That's the one thing they haven't said. They haven't shown the correlation between how they've been treating us all along and how now they're treating each other with cameras on. So we need to see where they're going before we can come up with a plan. And then we don't know what, because how many of us are Pan-Africanists? How many of us are Negroes? How many of us are we splintered so to the point where we can't? I don't believe that. I think we can't come together because most of us voted for Kamala Harris, white man marrying, half African, wishy-washy type of person. We can come together on some things. We can come together on some things. So I believe we can come together. But what are we going to come together on now, which is really integral, because these people, are we going, what are we going to come together? First, we got to find out where they are. And we don't know where they are. But I think in my heart that they all about, all of them, they enjoy that white privilege. And they, even if they're not about white supremacy, they white supremacy, they're about the white privilege, and it's enough of them to where they're together that where they just say, forget it, just forget it all. So we, but until then, when they decide what they about in America and around the world, because it seems to be that all the white folks about the same around the world, they don't want to get with the white privilege. We have to have come up with a plan. And I hate to say it, we can't be proactive now. We got to watch them.
So
We can't.
we got to be on the lookout.
We got to be on the lookout. We got to watch them. We can't come up with a plan. We got to watch them first. That's what I'm saying, bro.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me respond to that because I fundamentally agree with your analysis and the way I have seen this for a while is that a lot of this, and I talked about the election 2024, comes down to what do white people who know better, what are they prepared to do about white people who won't do better. Okay, now that fundamentally, that is a thing in and of itself, and how that plays out will decide some of this. The other part of it, though, is we got to watch, and I agree with that part too. That fundamentally, this is probably a time for us to, I won't say sit back and do nothing but be observers and thinkers. And if I wanted to say it real quickly, my view would be we would tell white folks who know better, who are trying to do better, we'll be in the bullpen, okay? And if you get to the eighth inning with a lead, we'll come in and save the game, but we're not putting our ass out first. So if you put up the fight and you can and you put up a fight like you're trying to do, and you need some help at the end, you know, you're gonna have to give up some ass on this one. You want at the end, then we'll make a difference, but we ain't gonna be there first, and nor should we, okay? Because we've never benefited from doing the right thing just because it was the right thing. And that started with the American War, independence against the British. Corporal Adams was there first, and all it cost him was his life. And it didn't change anything for anybody else.
All right.
Yeah, that's right. We can't jump in, bro. That's why I said we got to sit back and understand, what are y'all going to do? What are you going to do? Because we can't presume nothing. We know their history. We know what they're showing you what they are consistently. But we're at a turning point here. We're at a pivot point right here because they're the ones that are getting shot on TV in the open where they don't have arms. They're not doing anything to warrant that type of behavior. So we got to see how they're going to look at that, and maybe there'll be some type of correlation behind how they look at that and how we've been treated all along. So we have to watch them and see first what they're going to do before we pivot, and hopefully we'll pivot as a group and as a conglomerate, as a group, and have some type of power in order to counter what the devils are doing.
All right, thanks. All right, Brother Larry.
Good evening, brothers. Once again, Mike Jones, you lay out a case that is just phenomenal. I'm not going to be very long because I get a sense that the court, there are going to be inquiries that answer my question, but I want to know, based off of what I've heard, why, you know, give me some reasons why we would not prepare to protect and build. And I said in that order, because we built before, we built on several occasions, but every time we build something, the status quo comes and destroys it, because they, much like Brother stated, that is part of their DNA to disrupt. And so, what, you know, at this time when things are constricting, and I think that you have used the St. Louis School District and the population of St. Louis City as a perfect analogy as to what's going on in America. So I'm trying to find out, why wouldn't we use some of that? You've already analyzed that. I mean, if you recall, you talked about the population dwindling in St. Louis City, there not being a need for the resources that we have, so it needs to constrict. And you couple that with some other things, I'm wondering why we you know, at what point, at this point, what we should be doing in that regard.
And Larry, I think you got to be able to do chew gum and walk at the same time. I think, as F. Scott Fitzgerald comment, what was a quote, is that the mark of intelligence is the ability to hold two contradictory ideas at the same time and still function. Okay. So I think that's what it means. That's what it has always meant to be black in America. That's what it will still mean. I think we have to be mindful of the changing physical circumstances in America and in the world. So the reality is white folks clowning when they're 85% of the population is one thing, and trying to clown when you're only 53%, and the younger you get, the less the white percentage goes down even more. So outside of, and I wouldn't not consider this a possibility, some kind of suicidal, we'll blow it up rather than give it up. Fundamentally, you got something else will happen. Now, I'm not predicting what the something else is, but as you brothers have been talking, I what popped into my mind was Jesse Jackson's speech in the 88 Democratic Convention. And to me, the part of the speech that still resonates is he started talking about, his grandmother making a quilt out of scraps and pieces of cloth to build something that would keep everybody warm. And he goes through this litany of people from labor to Latinos to us, you name it. And he says the same thing. You're right, you got a patch, but your patch is not big enough. So at the end of the day, for better or worse, and I'm not prepared to say I predict, and I try to be a realist without and not and I'm never an optimist, but I try not to be a cynic. So with that equivocation, something is going to happen. That what was is not going to continue to be. That these systems that have been the infrastructure of America are worn out, they're obsolete. The culture is particularly dissipated. And one observation I would make is that American elites are now corrupt and dysfunctional. The United States Congress, House and the Senate, looks more like the Roman Senate under Caligula with Trump than it does what the United States Senate looked like 50 years ago or 100 years ago. So when you have in any society, any culture, you start to see the moral collapse or the ethical collapse of elites relative to their responsibility for maintaining the integrity of whatever system they benefit from, is an indication that you're looking at a country or society that's probably beginning its downward span. And when you take the fact that the United States is 250 years old, that's about right. Okay, not that it'll collapse overnight, because societies and countries don't collapse overnight. They look like they did when they finally fall, but it's because the systems break down, the culture is no longer relevant to what a country or a society has to be to function at a necessary level to maintain itself. And I would suggest that's what you're looking at right now. The fact that Donald Trump could be president, and as was said earlier, 70, 80 million people vote for, says more about the collapse of the country than anything. Because for me, a Trump is not the cause of anything. He is a symptom of fundamentally a declining culture and a decline of society. And the only question is, when does it hit the bottom, and how, and what does that bottom look like? And that's the other part of this that I think we have to think about, like.
What do you make of the job losses that were announced today? 15,000, 16,000 from Amazon, 30,000 coming from UPS. I mean, how does that factor in? Because I would imagine you're going to have to consider AI and some other things in those contemplations.
Oh, yeah. Well, to the brother's point earlier, this is a white folks' problem. Okay, the collapse of America will have some impact on us, but it'll be minimum because we are already in the parade cleaning up behind the elephants. Okay, so we already there. Okay, so. So if something happens to the parade, it can't mess us up really no more than we already are from an aggregate standpoint.
I don't know.
Yeah. So I
Look,
would,
hey,
yeah.
we got a million. We got a million of our intellectual women out of work, and it's barely a year that they've been in. That's not affecting us.
I didn't say. It, but in a country of 300 million people, when you start collapsing the kind, and
How many of
we're,
us?
oh, well, I mean, we're 14% of the population. We
A million
pretend,
out of,
not,
we're 14% and a
not,
million of our, just
we're,
our women.
but I, wait a minute. I'm not saying that we're not impacted. I'm saying if, you're trying to look at how we play this hand. One of the things that who's going to feel a lot of the pain, and it goes to your first point earlier, is what do the, how do they react when the screws start to turn on white Americans? I will go to the what happened in the last 2 weeks in Minneapolis, when the white police shot the white woman in the face, it got some buzz. When they murdered the white man in front of everybody, the whole place kind of gets epileptic. And what you're watching is the contraction of the United States, and it'll have the biggest effect on the people who have benefited the most. And we're not those people. So again, not saying that we won't be impacted, but you're going to be looking at, I think, seismic kind of changes on a much larger portion of the population that will impact whatever this response is going to be. And I think your point is well taken. We need to see what that looks like before we decide what course of action we want to take.
Right, let me go to Professor Rao. Professor Rao, you want to chime in on that question?
Appreciate what's been said. I understand it correct. I want first of all, and thank Mike for coming on and Brother Larry and all the other people that's on. It's good. It's a good discussion. I see things a lot different. I think we've come a long way from where we were in the Holocaust of enslavement and the colonialization period on the continent. The system makes you think, oppression makes you think you ain't progress. But you got to look at the freedoms as Larry said years ago compared to the freedom we have today. It's the choice of what we're doing with the freedom that's an issue. There's nothing stopping people from organizing and struggling for what's right. There's a lot of groups and organizations out there doing a lot of things. They just don't get the support that they should. And in the voting, I mean, white folks been cheating at elections since they started. They excluded the Native American women And Africans, they've always been beaten at elections. And this is nothing new. I just think that, oppression makes you feel inferior. And you develop an inferior vocabulary. You inferiorize yourself. You make yourself feel like you're helpless. White man's just God. You got all the bombs, you got all that. But people, wherever there's injustice, people resist. They still haven't conquered Hamas in Gaza. All that bombing, them people still resisted. They still really haven't conquered Venezuela. They make you think they have, but the people say, "Hey, look, we ain't gonna fight now. Maybe we may have to fight them later on our turf and our way." They lost the Vietnam War. And white folks been killing white folks. This ain't the first time they killed white folks a week ago or 2 weeks ago in Minnesota. The biggest in the Revolutionary War, that was white folks fighting white folks. The Civil War, white folks fighting white folks. The Spanish-American War, white folks fighting white folks. Those Spanish people were white. It's the same thing with World War One, except for with the Japanese. And the only reason they fought and beat the Japanese, they dropped atom bombs on them. And they had to submit. But look, now Japan, everything bought from Japan, bought from Japan, and Japan make them take care of them and give them make them defend them and all of that. I mean, the struggle is a continuous struggle. We got a long way to go, so people be thinking, "Oh, well, we can't get there." Maybe we may not get there in our lifetime, but there are young people that are standing up and building coalitions and alliances with progressive people. And don't be believing the man when he say all the Mexicans voted for Trump. Oh, white folks in the Democratic Party, they crossed over. Just like they crossed over when Mayor Bratty in L.A. was running, he won the Democratic nomination for governor. He crossed over. He got a higher percentage of Mexican votes than before, and I understand because a lot of them, they listen to Fox and they go with what Fox say, but a lot of them don't, and a lot of them are struggling. And you got to remember, Mexico is still connected to North America. And they're talking about taking over Venezuela. Why? I mean, they just treat Mexico like it's a little gate that you can cross. And there ain't no water separating us. You understand? I mean, you go down to California and San Diego, you cross the border, you just go through a gate. You understand? But I'm just telling you, man, I the reason I say what I say, because I thought that just not liking white people was black for what they had done to us and what they were doing. But loving black people, caring for black people, and seeing the positive attributes of black people. Larry's an attorney. You are an educated man. Rasha Key is educated. Brother Ernest is educated. Brother Ahi, Mashinda, all they got degrees and stuff. You had to hustle for them, but you got them. What about people years ago that couldn't even go to school? It was a law against reading and writing. You get killed for that. So there's a lot. I mean, I just think you have to have a victorious attitude, a victorious vocabulary, and you have to support groups. If you can't get out there and do things, I'm old now, 78, going on 78, and Ernest is too. But we can support those that are doing things that we think they are doing the right thing. There's a lot of issues. When Kingdom was struggling, there was just one issue. They were fighting against civil fighting for civil rights against laws, against segregation. It's one issue, segregation. And then the Black Power movement was Black empowerment. That's just two issues. Now you got AIDS, you got all kind of issues. I mean, you know, and people are reparation movement, you got the, I mean, Black Lives Matter movement, and, you know, you got No Kings movement. And, I mean, it's just out there, and you didn't have the media coverage that you have today. And like the brother said last night, we have to, the AI we need to look at is our ancestral intelligence, and rather than the AI the guy got. But I think we're making a lot of progress. Yes, there's a struggle. A lot of women suffer. A lot of women got fired. A lot of men didn't even get hired. You talk about the women got fired. What about the brothers that ain't even got hired? That's on drugs and things of that nature. But there's a significant amount of us that are progressive. And you don't need everybody. We sometimes say, oh, we got, all of us got to unify. There ain't one group you can say that all their people is unified. Not even white folk. There ain't no one do, but we put that on each other. How come we can't get together, all of us? Hey, look, we're diverse people with diverse thinking. We got religious hang-up. We got economic differences. We got education differences, and we got social behavioral differences. But we're moving forward still. We've come too far to turn around, as our ancestors say. And we have to have a optimistic perspective. We're not only fighting the political system of, in America, but this climate change can wipe everybody out. That's what wiped the dinosaurs out. You understand it freezing out there where y'all at? Well, I know if you're in Chicago or New York, you know, you said, damn, when's this going to heat up? You understand? In Minnesota and all that, people out there demonstrating in Minnesota, let me, and I'll close, demonstrating in Minnesota below zero, in the cold, and supporting the Somalian community, filming them and warning them, and the Latino community and the Black community there. This is a coalition. Now, listen, I ain't fooled by no Caucasian. You understand? I mean, you know, those that work with us, fine, but I keep an eye on all of them anyway. You know, I own some of the brothers because we got agent provocateurs and turncoats and everything join us and then go tell the man what we're doing. But the point is that when you have experience in the struggle, you know how to get around all that. And I mean, it's a culture fight. If we change our values, look, they're calling for an economic boycott. They're calling for a No Kings March in March. They're calling for the nurses. Even the nurses have stepped up against the system. So they are taking that when they're not working. They protest. You got when they're fighting each other. That's what Malcolm said. So I'm optimistic, and I think the way forward is to continue the struggle. Continue to make sure our kids are registered and politically conscious. Educated, as Larry was saying. We must be educated. And as Mike is saying, okay, educated, not the miseducation that Mike is talking about. We have to educate our children to what they need to learn and what they need to be doing. And our young people, we have to practice and be an example of what they should be doing. And that's one, educating them to be more politically conscious, more economically conscious, and more what's going on in the world conscious. Now, we're going to have a significant amount that ain't going to do that. But all we need is a few that can excel. You got Muslim women that's been elected to Congress. Black women. That's never been thought of. You understand? The sister, when they sprayed that thing on her, she went at the dude. She didn't run. She was, and he had to run. I mean, I like that. I give her a standing ovation for being strong. They say, well, you need to go get checked out. She said, well, I ain't going right now. I'm staying here and speak my piece. That's strength, man. And that's a good example of Black womanism. You understand? So we I'm just saying, just that's the way I see it. Yeah. Anybody want to contradict me, you're welcome. Go ahead.
Okay, Dr. Charles. Dr. Charles, you want to unmute?
Good evening. What's up, Brother Rashiki? Good evening, Baba Rod. Good evening, Mike Jones.
It's good to hear you, Brother Rob. Good Charles.
And good evening, everyone else. I have a pretty simple question. Well, I don't know if it's a simple question, but I got like one question. So this is my question for D. Mike Jones. Given that a lot of folks don't necessarily understand what politics are and what it means to be political, don't know what political actions are, can you give us 2 to 3 pillars of political thought that can inform how we move and or where we go from here?
Okay, so first of all, let me say to Brother Brother Rob, I would sum up what you just said in like, I got a one sentence for that, and that is oppressed people always win when they resist, not when they overcome. The victory is in the resistance. And so that's critically important. Charles, to your point, first, I think you got to understand my position. You got to understand what politics is. So from my life experience, I would define politics as simply this. It is the art and the science of acquiring and using power to advance your interests, period. The shapes and the forms are all academic, but the essence of it is, again, it's an art and a science. There's parts of it that you have to do, and then there's another part of it you just kind of have to have the knack. So it's art and a science, but it's all about the acquisition and use of power. That's number one. Number two is to understand that politics is an amoral business, okay? It's nothing, there's not a right and a wrong. It just is. And I'm mindful of an old Greek guy named Thucydides. I always mess up his name. But he wrote this, and it's something you should always kind of remember. It's in response to inside of the context of a discussion between the city of Milos and Athens, in the city of Athens during the Greek Athens and Sparta Civil War. And Milos was aligned with Sparta, and Athens said, "You're too close to us, you can't be." And they were going back and forth. And in the end, the ambassador of Milo said, well, We got to stay with Sparta because it's the right thing to do. We gave our word. And the Greek ambassador, Athenian ambassador, told him this. He held it kind of up of his hand. He said, "We can stop talking now." And here was his quote. He said, "You and I both know that right as the world goes is only a question between equals in power. The strong do what they can, the weak suffer for what they must." That ain't never changed. It ain't changed in 2,500 years, and it won't change in the next 2,500 years. So understand it's the art and science of acquiring and using power, and right is a function of, is only a question among equals in power. Okay, that's it. And the other one is something from Machiavelli, but other folks have kind of said it after him, and that is, don't get used to suffering. Okay, and develop the propensity to not like that, because if you get used to it, you'll accept it. So fundamentally, those three things, I would say, if you understand those three things, you could figure out the mechanics of the specifics in any given day. If you violate any of those or ignore any of those, either of those three things, you will probably end up on the short end of a very bad stick.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dr. Charles. All right, Ernest.
Oh, that wasn't no
Thank
setup
you.
question. I didn't know you were going to ask that.
It's all good. Doctor, I mean, Ernest.
Yeah, I'm kind of agree a little bit with everybody, but just like my daughter's in France. Every day she called me and said, "David, my neighbors and stuff, which are French citizens, said they wonder the America going crazy and shit. They're not doing nothing." I said, "There's a lot going on, a lot of community organization. We're not just sitting back taking this. We see what's happening." And kind of like Dr. Ross, for 87 years, I've been there, been voting since I was 17, every election. And one thing my dad always taught me, it might seem to be the worst of the worst times now, but when we get another election, we can change that. And the honest thing I'm interested, I told her that the people that he's screwing over right now with this supremacy bullshit, they're gonna see the light because they're being hurt worse than minorities. You know, like a lot of these jobs, a lot of whites, it's like he's killing welfare and things. It's more of them on welfare than it is of us. So things might seem bad, because I remember when Ronald Reagan got elected. Oh, that's the end of everything. And now look, what was that, back in 1980 to now? It wasn't the end of nothing. And this clown we got in there now is not going to be the end. We get rid of him, because I'm sure most of the intelligent white people can see what the hell's happening, and I got confidence that we're gonna get rid of him, and then things can righten up, you know, can get better. But I'm not gonna panic, because I kind of panicked a little bit when Reagan came in, and then when after he got in, I saw, well, shit, you know, things didn't really go that bad. I don't think this next election, at least we can get rid of this guy after four or three more years of dealing with him. But I'm sure we people have better sense than to vote him back in, because they're getting a lot of bad end of like my man mentioned earlier, they're getting the short end of the stick too. So
Ernest, can I ask you a
I
question?
refuse to panic right now.
Can I ask you a question, Ernest?
Yeah.
What has what has troubled me and been on my mind is that we don't spend enough time thinking about up the road. We spend a lot of time, it seems to me, measuring where we are based on where we came from, not necessarily where we need to try to go. And I agree with your assessment that if you just take in absolute terms, is it better to be alive in 2026 than it is 1826? Definitely. But one of the things that has always troubled me when, and I'll just take Trump because you mentioned him and his folks, and they talk about make America great again. It would seem to me, I would suggest that there's nothing about America's past that we would want to preserve.
True.
Okay, and I think I raised the question this kind of evening this way, because for me, our relief, salvation, or whatever term of art you want to use, is in the future. It ain't in the past. And for everybody who's looking backwards and talking about what it was, and that's a conversation that nobody black, no matter how well they're doing and no matter how successful their ancestors were, et cetera, there should be nobody black that wishes to go back to whatever America was yesterday. And for me, that was kind of the whole point of this discussion, to help figure out how we can stay focused on tomorrow and the road ahead, as opposed to where we are and the road that got us here.
I agree with that, because that's why I always encourage my kids, when they hit 17, you got to look at the issues and go vote, because you're the one voting your best interests. And don't be afraid to write letters, because if you write enough letters to enough people in office, you can change some things. It take a lot of doing and a lot of help, but you can't just sit back and think things are just going to come to you. You got to go out and fight for them. So can't just sit back on our laurels, because like he was saying, you're dealing with some real enemies here. So,
all right, thanks a lot, Brother Hembry.
Yes, sir.
You want to chime in on this?
Kind of tuned in late, so I didn't get the beginning. I've been listening to what's been said. The Brother Jones, speaking about historical stuff and kind of like in an insignificant manner, I have to disagree with him on that, because there are some things in history that we need to draw upon that we can apply today to help our situation out. That's my opinion. One thing we need to do is look in the mirror and love what's looking back at us, number one. Until we do that, things are going to be very difficult. Then with all the religious differences, which is a big hang-up along with the educational system, creates a problem. But as far as politics go, I have a phrase that I use. I don't suffer from the illusion of inclusion, because there's not enough of us number-wise to do anything nationally. And locally, folks have, I guess you call it, black flight, folks have left the communities that used to be black, at least around here in Compton and South Central and places that I know about. I don't know about the other parts of the country. But one thing we can do is, from a self-reliance in a Pan-African sense, as far as helping ourselves out, because we need basics. We need food, we need shelter, we need to be able to protect ourselves, which I think should be number one, because every time we get something going, and we have had a plethora of positive things going in black communities over the last couple of centuries here, but we weren't able to protect ourselves in that. And in doing that, you know, I know we don't have the warfare to deal with Mr. Charlie, but just like Malcolm said, you know, sometimes you just need some guerrillas, you know, that can deal with the situation. Like Malcolm said, the Viet Cong, all they need was a rifle and a pair of tennis shoes. And they, you know, did a number on the United States, and no offense to the brothers who served in the military. I'm kind of on the Booker T. Washington and Du Bois thing, the debate with them, but more Booker T. about us, you know, creating our own, you know, and then with the number of resources that we have back home in the motherland, which many of us don't want to identify with, that's what the white boys they're doing, getting a natural resource. That's how he's made who he is and still doing it today. But we got a few people standing up like Ephraim Toure and Burkina Faso and others around on the continent that are trying to put a stop to that. I remember Idi Amin was doing that about 30 years ago. And I thought that was great. But there are some lessons we can draw from the past that we can apply to today. And, you know, to further our struggle along. Like the brother we had on last night, talking about the brothers that he took up to the Bloom's Ranch and have them doing that thing about growing food. I was reading a book on the Mau Mau called, not the Mau Mau, but the Mali, the Dogon, and how they would take a series of boys, just like, you know, Doc did up at his ranch, and raise them together and teach them certain skills that we need in society. We need bricklayers, we need roofers, we need cement people, you know, we need carpenters, we need gardeners, we need mechanics. Take a series of young men and bring them up and train them in these skills so that they can help build our society and help sustain themselves and their families. So these things in history that I believe can assist us in where we need to go. And I'm through. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
All right. Well, Mike, I think everybody has spoken, and you can close us on out, and we can save it for another time to do some more talking.
Well, I would say the whole point of the evening for me was to create a conversation, and we got that. And to your point, it's to be continued, okay? This is both complicated and complex, and we're not going to solve it all in 1 hour, one night. But we got to stay in the struggle.
We definitely going to keep doing what we're doing, and I think you guys are doing an excellent job, and I appreciate everybody participating on this platform to keep the dialogue going, because you're definitely going to get some thoughts, and with those thoughts you can build on your thought process and keep moving forward. It's definitely about surviving and then teaching people how to survive. So I would say something, but I think enough was said tonight, and We have next week, we have Brother Larry coming on, and we're organizing a topic for that. Well, he is. And as soon as he gives me that topic, we're going to roll with that. But we keep it going. You know, I hope everybody was pleased with the production tonight, and we just keep moving forward.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Good night.
Professor Rahul, do we have anybody for next Tuesday?
Yeah. I forgot, man. I think you got Freddie Goss, either Brother Keeley from Black Lives Matter. I'm not sure. I'll let you know in the morning. I got to confirm them.
Okay. Well, that's good.
We'll try to get Peter from Black Lives Matter.
You're talking about Freddie Goss that played for UCLA back in the 50s or something?
Yeah, Freddie Goss set Compton High's basketball record and scoring. But he talks about the exploitation of athletes and all of that, the new thing. But I'm going to probably go with Akili if I can get him.
Okay.
Or Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Okay. So we do have
But I just want to say this, man, before we leave. Oppression is a trip, man. It makes you think you ain't did nothing. But, boy, we've come a long way. That's all.
All right. So if everybody can see this, tomorrow we have our other series, Roots Reggae Reasoning Sessions. And we got a brother named Chaka Man coming on. He's a drummer. And so we'll be here tomorrow night too. So we always got something going on here. So thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks, Mike Jones. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say thank you.
Okay. All right. So we'll be back next week with Larry Fields, and everybody that was here might be here next week. So yeah, each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Good evening.
All right, fellas. Good evening.
Show to learn.